on air, WICC 600. Online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
And welcome back. Joining us now is Jonathan Perlow, who is one of the founders and leaders of something called Voter Choice Connecticut, an all-volunteer citizens group leading an effort to implement ranked choice voting for state and federal elections in Connecticut. It was formed in December of 2018 and says that it has over 3,000 supporters in Connecticut. Jonathan also started and led the successful movement to get Connecticut to join the National Popular Vote Compact in 2018. He has written opinion pieces on voting rights and election reform. His background is in marketing communications, and he worked as a communication strategist for a global digital advertising agency for most of his career. He now is all about legislative advocacy. Jonathan Perlow, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
Good morning. Jonathan, I have a question. Now, this says it's all volunteer, and in your own bio, you say that you do legislative advocacy, but how do you make a living now?
So I have a day job, which right now I'm taking a 30-minute break from, but I work on gun violence prevention advocacy for an organization in Connecticut.
Oh, okay. And so that is something that you can pay the bills and eat on. You got to be able to eat somehow, Jonathan. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, I saved a little money, and I have a wife who also has an income, so that helps a lot. I'm really fortunate to be able to work on something that I care about a lot.
So tell me a little bit about your passion. Well, let's go back a minute, because nobody really understands what ranked voting is. You really have to give us the ABCs. We really don't understand. I mean it, truly. We really don't understand Explain it. What is ranked voting?
Okay, so let me tell you about that. So right now, just kind of as some context, early voting and no-excuse absentee voting are getting a lot of attention in Connecticut. There's actually a public hearing on those measures on Monday. And they're both really important because Connecticut is one of the most restrictive states in the country when it comes to voting early or by absentee ballot. And people in the last election, when we had the exception because of the pandemic, they really saw how convenient it was to vote by absentee ballot. But we believe that strengthening our democracy requires more than making it easier to vote. It requires that the winning candidates better reflect the will of the people. And that's what ranked choice voting does. So if you think about it, at the foundation of our democracy are elections that aim to represent the will of the people, and that's usually as expressed by the majority of voters. But the plurality voting system that we use today in most elections often falls short of that aspiration. So in plurality elections, voters cast their ballots for one candidate, and the candidate who receives the most votes wins. You know, everybody's pretty familiar with that. The problem is that doesn't necessarily mean the candidate got a majority of votes. So you can end up with situations where candidates win, even though a majority of voters preferred some other candidate. There are a variety of reasons for that, such as vote splitting and spoiler candidates and wasted votes, but they all produce a common outcome that the winning candidates don't truly represent the majority. And so when you have three-way races, single choice voting or plurality voting creates this problem of strategic voting when voters go into the voting booth and they struggle between choosing the candidate they like best or the candidate that has the best chance of winning against the candidate they like least. And we don't think this or trying to game the system is the way voters should have to think about voting. So for a real world example, in the 2018 gubernatorial race here in Connecticut, a lot of people preferred the third-party candidate, Oz Griebel, to the other two major party candidates. But they worried that because he had very little choice of winning, they'd be throwing their vote away. And even worse, they might end up electing the candidate they least preferred. And that's not a good voting system. So ranked choice voting eliminates all these problems by allowing voters to vote their true preferences without fear of unintended consequences.
I don't understand. So how does it work? We're chatting with Jonathan Perlow about ranked choice voting.
And so now I'm going to tell you how it works.
Okay.
With ranked choice voting, voters have the option to rank candidates in the order they prefer them. So they can mark their first choice and their second choice and so on. They don't have to, but they're given that option. And in a ranked choice voting election, a candidate wins if they receive a majority of first choice votes. And that would produce the same outcome as today's plurality elections. But if no candidate gets more than 50% of the first choice votes, there's an instant runoff. So the last place candidate is eliminated, and the second choices of that candidate's voters are then transferred to the remaining candidates. So the person who got the fewest votes drops out, and you voted for that candidate. They now look at your second choice and reallocate your second choice to whoever is remaining in the race. And that process
I'm still confused. Hold on. You're going to have to do this with me. Wait a minute. If I'm confused, believe me, people are confused. So
it takes a couple times. So.
All right. So what happened in Georgia? Purdue didn't get 50%. So he had to run again. Is that what you're talking about? Was that a ranked choice thing?
Well, so the reason they had to have a runoff election is for two reasons. One, they require that the candidate win with the majority, not just the plurality. And the plurality simply means the person who got the most votes or the most of whatever it is. But in Georgia, they require that the winning candidate has to get a majority. There were more than two candidates running in that race, and no one got a majority. So they had to have that runoff election. Now, under ranked choice voting, they would have asked people, well, if you voted for Purdue as your first choice, who is your second choice? And rather than having to have a runoff election a couple months later, which costs the state a lot, it obviously costs the candidates money or their supporters because they have to continue campaigning. And another problem with runoff elections is participation is usually far less than in the general election. And so under ranked choice voting, which actually is sometimes called instant runoff voting, Purdue didn't get a majority. So the candidate no candidate got a majority. So the candidate who got the fewest votes would have been eliminated. And whoever voted for that eliminated candidate as their first choice, they would now get their second choices counted. So they would.
I see. Right? So here's what I'm imagining. Okay, so let's say, this is what I'm thinking. Bill Clinton never would have been president under ranked choice voting. He got 39.4% of the popular vote. 19% of the popular vote went to Ross Perot, who was challenging George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. The people that voted for Ross Perot, I'm guessing the majority of them would have said, well, if Ross doesn't win, I'd rather go with the Republican than the Democrat. So what you're saying is that in that example, with nobody having gotten anywhere close to the majority, not even close, the Ross Perot people would have dropped out, and that 19% of the popular vote, those second choices, would have been distributed among Clinton and Bush, and then whoever won of those two would be the winner. Is that what you're saying?
You understand it perfectly, and the one aside is, let's put aside the Electoral College and all those.
Right, I'm putting aside the Electoral College, which is its own unique thing in federal elections. That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right, and for the example in Georgia, if they used ranked choice voting in their Senate election in the general campaign or the general election last year, it's likely that Purdue and or Loeffler would have actually been elected because, to your point, as I recall, the independent or the third party candidate was more conservative than
he was a libertarian
running.
He was a libertarian. So it's hard to know. Right. But yes, maybe more Republican than not. Yeah. But you never know. But like the Green Party with Ralph Nader, Al Gore would have been president also. So we would have had George H.W. and we would have had Al Gore if we could extrapolate that to the federal, which we won't because we have a different system. But I see.
Right. But in that case, it actually was the case because the election came down to Florida, and Florida is where Ralph Nader
got thousands of votes.
And here in Connecticut, and I think you bring up an important point with Ross Perot and with the Georgia Senate election. this is not an election reform that favors one party or another. What it favors is the voters and who the majority of voters prefer. And by prefer, that may not be their first choice, but, you know, the second choice is better than their last choice, right? So in the gubernatorial race, if you go back to Connecticut in 2018, Stefanowski in the primary was elected by, you know, with the very, I think it was like 25-30% at most of the primary voters, which means, you know, almost three times as many preferred other candidates. Mm-hmm. And it's possible in the Republican primary, they might have come out with a stronger candidate who could have won against Ned Lamont.
So if Mark Boughton had had more second choices and some first, then what you're saying is he might have gone ahead of Stefanowski to challenge Lamont in the general election.
Exactly. And so we want to be very clear with your listeners that this is not like a, you know, a liberal election reform. It is a nonpartisan voter election reform.
So, Jonathan Perlow, explain to me why in the state of Washington, there was a very fascinating op-ed written from this particular commentator about why he thought that ranked choice voting actually influenced the positions of current leaders to encourage them to be less extreme and less pandering to whatever the, you know, extreme elements of their own political party are. Tell me how that plays right out in the real world with politicians.
Great point. And by the way, you know a lot more than you give yourself credit for about understanding ranked choice voting or its implications and benefits. So if you think about it, if I'm a candidate today and I'm canvassing and I'm, you know, walking along the street and I see a sign out for my opponent, I'm probably going to pass over. I'm not going to waste my time talking to that voter because it's clear who their first choice is or who their choice is. But let's say it's a ranked choice voting election. Well, I might go up to that house and say, you know, I see that you obviously are a Smith supporter. But I just wanted to let you know, there's a lot of things that Smith and I have in common, so I would really encourage you to make me your second choice. And so rather than there being incentives for candidates to bash each other because they just need to get the vote, period, there's actually an incentive to kind of demonstrate that there are some shared, you know, positions and values, and that results in a more positive election. And there are studies that show that voters in cities is where ranked choice voting is used most today in the United States, that the campaigns are perceived as being less negative. There's less negative campaigning. The other thing is there's a lot of people who might run for office today who frankly don't want to because they don't want to be in the position of being a spoiler. And so they sit out. And so if we could encourage races with more candidates representing more diversity of opinions, voters would have more choice and it wouldn't be as, you know, sort of polarized as it is today. There are also studies that show, again, in cities, municipalities that are using ranked choice voting, more women, more people of color are running and winning in those races because, you know, they can get in. They have a chance.
Tell me, explain, though, I get totally why there would be less bashing. I get that. Mm-hmm. Because if you really bash the other person, you're likely to not get that second vote.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a hedge against nastiness in a campaign. I get that.
Exactly.
Maybe not in the general election, per se. Maybe, but even maybe in the general election, but certainly in a primary. I get that totally. Mm-hmm. But how does it moderate the stances of actual politicians? For example, I'm told that ranked choice voting is in Alaska, and mm-hmm. that Senator Lisa Murkowski has said publicly that, attributing some of the way in which she feels she could have voted recently on the ranked choice voting system in her state as encouraging the independence of the Alaskan voter, she seems to feel less threatened in an upcoming primary, for example. Why?
Right.
Explain again.
So, yeah. So Alaska's going to be a little complicated because they voted for open primaries and it'll kind of take too long to get into that. But let's go back to another real example. Let's look at the 2016 Republican primary, where there were, what, a dozen or more candidates. In the first, leading up to Super Tuesday or so, Donald Trump was winning primaries with about 30% of the vote, which means twice as many people preferred other candidates. The problem is there were 10 other candidates, and if you sort of say all those candidates were somewhat similar in terms of being more mainstream Republicans, the 60 or 70% of the voters were splitting their votes among those 10 candidates, and that left a candidate which I think is fair to say held a somewhat extreme view even in his own party. He ended up getting elected, and then as the primaries went on and people dropped out, he did start winning in some cases a majority. But if you look at all the primary votes cast in the Republican primaries throughout the election, Donald Trump ended up winning the nomination with about 40% of the vote. So again,
more
people preferred. Yeah. So, I don't really care where you stand on Donald Trump or not. It's just an example. Even in the Democratic Party. So here's another sort of example of how ranked choice voting helps. In the Democratic primary last year, you'll remember that right before Super Tuesday, three candidates dropped out. And they dropped out because they were moderate and they wanted to make sure that a moderate candidate who was represented by Joe Biden won, as opposed to the more progressive candidate, Bernie Sanders. And again, it's not a judgment about any candidate or another. But one of the problems that we're having now is, unlike in Connecticut, most parts of the country can vote early. And so particularly in a primary, let's say you cast your vote, 3 or 4 weeks ahead of election day, and there's a crowded field and you vote for Pete Buttigieg. And then come election day or the day before election day, he decides to drop out of the race. Well, you just kind of wasted your vote because he's not running anymore. In a ranked choice voting election, you could rank Pete Buttigieg first and maybe you would have picked Amy Klobuchar second and Joe Biden third. And when Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg dropped out the day before the primary in whatever state it was, your vote would have still counted because you had a third choice. Joe Biden still running.
Now, what happens if in this ranked choice you do have 10 candidates? Can you have more than one runoff before you actually get to majority?
Well, in a sense, you can have more than one instant runoff. So if nobody wins the first choice votes, the candidate with the fewest votes drops out, and they reallocate that candidate's votes to the remaining candidates. And if still nobody gets a majority, then the next one drops out. So you keep iterating it until someone gets a majority.
Oh, I see. Until somebody eventually gets a majority. Okay. But you don't do another whole election. You don't just get one shot at it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I see. Well, Jonathan Perlow, this is fascinating. Is ranked choice a bill before the legislature this year in Connecticut?
Sort of. So what is before the legislature right now that's still in committee is HB 5884. And that's a bill to establish a task force to study ranked choice voting for implementation in Connecticut. And at Voter Choice Connecticut, we recognize that this is a significant change to how we would run elections and how candidates would be elected. There are some questions about our state statutes and what's allowed and not allowed. And so we believe the right first step is actually to study it. Although we absolutely believe that this is an election reform whose time has come, there's a process to get there. And so there is a bill that's been introduced. It was introduced by 10 legislators to set up this task force. It's now in the Government Administration and Elections Committee, but that committee has not decided to take action on it. And one of the things that we're asking our supporters and other people who think this is a worthwhile election reform is to contact their legislators and ask them to co-sponsor the bill to demonstrate that there is support for it. And I'll note, as you pointed out, we started our organization back in December 2018, And in 2019, we were advocating for the same thing, a study bill. That bill passed the House in 2019. It didn't get called in the Senate because it was kind of the crush at the end of the legislative session. The bill was raised again last year by the GAE committee, but then the pandemic happened, so everything was put on hold. So this is actually not something that is new. Since the bill was introduced, we've picked up 21 co-sponsors, including Representative Leeper, who you were talking about earlier. In 2019, Representative Steinberg voted for this bill in the House. So there's a lot of support for it out there. But we recognize there's a lot going on, and it's really difficult to pass legislation this year.
This year is very hard. Yeah, I've been speaking with some insiders. It's just not a great year to pass a lot of things. It's just not fair. It's not the normal way people do business, Jonathan Perlow. Right. It just isn't. You can't walk the halls. The Zoom things are very limited. I don't like it. I wouldn't do major policy reform this year. I would wait until we're all together again. You know, I think we just have to get through this pandemic in the rearview mirror. That's my own personal opinion, regardless of whether or not, you know, I would be in support of this. I don't like when big changes are being passed during this time. I think it's not right.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of our point is this isn't a change. This is just saying, let's study it. And since we've kind of lost 2 years where, you know, we don't think it's a big lift. When the bill was brought to the House in 2019, it was debated for 20 minutes and then passed with a comfortable margin. So it's not asking a lot. But, you know, we get the realities, and there is a lot of attention on the early voting and no excuse absentee ballot voting. And we are like 100% behind that tonight. We're going to send out an email to our supporters asking them to submit testimony in support of that because we think that is a critical election reform. We're just saying, you know, we'd like to see the legislature do more. And there, you know, there's a ton of bills being considered, but, you know, some of the bills that have been raised in the GAE committee, one of them, for example, is to consider whether pizza should be the state food.
Right. I know. Jonathan, I've got to run. Yeah. Jonathan, I've got to run. Jonathan Perlow, thank you so much. Jonathan is at Voter Choice Connecticut. You can look them up online if you want to know more about ranked choice voting. We'll have you back on again. Jonathan Perlow, thanks so much for being on the Lisa Wexler Show today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate the time and your interest.
Thank you so much. We'll be right back.